We're skipping Christmas completely.
If only we could take our love of reading to a new level.
Well, I've always wanted to start a book club.
Book club!
For
masochists and other deviants.
Welcome to the Book Club for Masochists, where we read and discuss all the books regardless of our actual interest in them. This week, Joy of Joys, this month, Joy of Joys.
This episode.
Episode, whatever. We have a special episode dedicated to the holiday season. So we are
specifically the Christmas holiday season, because this might not actually be going out.
Shut up, Matthew. Yes. Stop clarifying, everybody. We get the idea. All right. So we do have a holiday-based episode, and we read a variety of different holiday books, and I think it turned out to be mostly Christmas-themed, but they were off of a lot of different types and subjects. We did not define a specific genre around that, so we could read whatever kinds of Christmas books we want.
Nonfiction.
Or
sci-fi.
Nonfiction.
Biography.
Yeah, absolutely. We had some good selections from just about all of those, and then we also had some very bad selections from just about all of those.
Well, I just wanted to say that it wasn't specifically Christmas. It was supposed to be like winter themed as well. The idea was to create a winter-themed display / holiday-themed display for a library. And most of us went with Christmas, but it would have been possible just to have a bunch of books with the word ice in the title as well.
Yes, but one of the interesting things I found when I started looking for books this month, and by this month I mean 3 months ago when we read this genre, was they're so Christmas-themed, all of them. I had originally thought, oh, I'm going to get some winter ones. I'm going to get some, you know, non-generic or, like, just really generic winter things. I'm going to read a Kwanzaa, you know, Chrismahana Kwanzaa book. But really, most of the literature is very, very Christmas-themed in terms of winter holiday books.
It kind of makes sense because that's what the predominant number of – that's the holiday that most people celebrate in this country. There's not that many people that celebrate Hanukkah in Vancouver.
Yeah. It is, though it is interesting, like, you can totally find random winter and snow and ice books out there, but, like, it's way harder in terms of pulling it together for, like just finding the variety of things out there. Like, there's no, can't just put in the search term Christmas. And you can't just put in the search term snow and actually necessarily get, like, what you get, what I found I got was so many kids' books when I did things like that. Lots and lots of kids' books on stuff.
That's an interesting point. So they're not really cataloged to be able to find.
Well, it's not.
By, like, taking place.
Yeah.
In a snowy climate in the winter.
Yeah, for adult.
For adult, yeah, it's just like
it's a learning area for kids where you thematic, like, you know, adults go around creating themes for kids to learn from, so we need storybooks on this theme right now, and so they are categorized that way and organized that way for kids' things, but not for adults' things. We don't do that with them, generally.
Well, some of the adult books are categorized that
way. Yeah, some of them. so it was interesting going through the process of finding what to do for that. And quite honestly, the other thing is, like, this season is so insane. We started this too late. We should have totally started it in November and read it through the first half of December because it is just such a crazy time for a whole variety of reasons that it is really hard to think through the process of the display stuff during the month. Like, you have to have thought that out ahead of time.
So that's something unique we did this month. For this genre, we'd never done this before, but we came up with the idea, I think it was Anna, I can't remember, who said we should all make a display, and I think Matthew alluded to that earlier. So, in addition to reading a whole bunch of books, a lot of us put together, you know, our ideal Christmas or holiday display as though we were working at a library. I mean, many of us do work in a library, but you know, if we were the person in charge of making that display, what would we put on it? And that was a really interesting exercise. I put a few books on mine that weren't available at the local library. I think I had one about solstice stories or what was it?
Yeah,
something
you had
about
that.
I was very upset.
Solstice is in the summer, so that doesn't make sense. But
winter solstice
stories, which I would have loved to actually read that book, but I think it wasn't available at our public library.
I was upset that I couldn't find the Klingon Christmas book.
Yeah, there were so many things I couldn't get my hands on by the time it came to this time frame, and I was like, man, I want that one on Christmas to put up, but yeah, wasn't available.
And the other thing I didn't really realize is the public library puts limits on the amount of time you can take out the holiday books. Some of them you can only take out for a week or 2 weeks or whatever, instead of the regular amount of time.
Yeah, that's interesting. That wasn't true from where I got most of the holiday books I ended up reading, but that is, like, you're right. I knew that for other
for
places.
The ones that are, like, kind of cataloged, you know, with the tree symbol or with the Christmas sticker or whatever.
That was actually something I went around looking at as I was selecting books for this month, was I actually even took pictures of all the different types of stickers that different library systems that I visited during that month use. Like, every system
What do they use?
So there's a little Christmas tree sticker
That's
on one.
Surrey, right?
There's red dot, yeah. There's a red dot on West Vancouver Memorial. They use a little red dot. And I forget, there's an actual Christmas the word. No, holiday. Holiday the word on another one. So, like, there's various, there's all sorts of different stickers that people put on to designate. So it really was making me think about, like, how we go about in the fiction section putting these extra stickers on the spines all over the place to designate.
Well, and some of them were missing. I think the books that I checked out mostly didn't have those stickers.
I found that too.
So they're applied a little inconsistently, I think.
Yeah. And I know some of that is based on, like, or can be based on specific ordering, and if it didn't come in that specific order that was designated holiday, it might have slipped through the process of getting the holiday sticker, or sometimes it can come through the, like, they didn't start applying the holiday stickers until a certain date, and anything cataloged before that date, they didn't go back and re-sticker.
Or, like we were mentioning earlier, it's not overtly about, like, it takes place during the winter holiday, and it's got the warm, cuddly feeling, and the charitable feeling of wanting to give to others, and the thematic tone of a holiday book, but it doesn't say Christmas on the cover, or whatever, right? So I can see how a book like that might slip through the cracks as well.
I did find that, too. There were a number of books where I picked up and I would look at and notice that the one that said something specific about holiday or Christmas on the cover was stickered, and the one that didn't specifically say it, but definitely was about the subject, did not have the sticker. So you're right. That happened.
So what did we actually read?
Who wants to go first?
Anna? Well, I think we should start with the one that we all read.
Which was?
The Haunted Tea Cozy by Edward Gorey.
I didn't read that.
Oh, I thought... No, you did.
I read, like, half of it at our book club meeting.
Oh, half of it.
It's only, like, 30 pages long.
I was listening to the conversation at the same time. Shut up.
Was this at the actual, like, at the reading meeting?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was trying to read it, but I was also trying to, like, drink my tea and listen to everyone's conversation.
Which is really funny, like, that reading meeting is supposed to be, like, us getting quiet time to sit down, but sometimes we just gossip so much we don't actually, like, read.
No, I mean the actual book club meeting.
Oh, at the book club meeting. Okay.
So, for those of you not in the know, we usually have two meetings every month.
Yes.
We have our reading meeting.
Where we eat, like, scones and drink tea.
And we read books, but really we gossip.
Yes.
And trade library books that...
Back and forth.
We have a little pecking order, like, oh, you got that one from the library. Yeah. Oh, well, that looks good. I want to read that one.
I put a hold on that, but I couldn't get to it. So you got it.
Hint, you want to let me borrow it?
And then
I'll give you this one.
And then we have our actual meeting where we discuss the books that we read and talk about the genre and kind of pull some thoughts together before we come in and record this, hopefully, shortly afterwards.
You know, 4 months later, 3 months later.
It's short is, you know, relative.
Shortly.
So anyway, The Haunted Tea Cozy, which I did not read.
Yes, but there was a whole bunch of us in the group that read The Haunted Tea Cozy because it was so short, and
I don't think
I've ever heard anyone say something bad about Edward Gorey.
I don't know. It is Edward Gorey.
Like, this book was not my favorite, but no one is like, I hate Edward Gorey.
Yeah.
Why would you?
I don't know. I love Edward Gorey as an illustrator and how Edward Gorey communicates through illustration in a variety of different ways, either as single illustrations or connected ones, whether they're explicitly connected or not. Like, I love all that. Sometimes I will follow, like, a portion of one of the stories, like, where he's actually put narration to it, and I'm like, that part was cool, and then frequently it just doesn't hold the whole thing for me. So that's what I usually find with Edgar Gorey. I still like, you know, it's worth it, just the fun of the illustrative way that he communicates narrative. It's great. But, so yes, I honestly cannot say that I remember a huge amount about this one. Do you, Matthew?
It was a Christmas Carol pastiche.
Okay.
There were like three ghosts stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. There was three ghosts.
A tea cozy, I assume.
Yeah.
Yep. Wow. Good memory retention.
I know.
Let's move on. Another book that several of us, or maybe just me and Matthew read, maybe, is The Hogfather.
Oh, yes.
By Terry Pratchett.
I didn't read that for this, but I have read that in the past.
Okay.
I wanted to read it. I couldn't get my hands on it.
Because Amanda had it.
Yeah, possibly.
No, I bought it because I couldn't get it from the library.
Oh, yeah. See? Now, a lot of people want to read this one at Christmas time, I think. Mm-hmm. It's, yeah, we'll talk about maybe why. But go for it.
Oh, so this is my first time reading The Hogfather, although I have read other Discworld novels in the series by Terry Pratchett, especially the young adult ones, like The Wee Free Men. And The Hogfather is basically like a Christmas parody. The Hogfather is essentially Santa, and it kind of takes place in this alternate fantasy world over Christmas, you know, time. And it's really, really interesting in the ways that he alludes to Christmas, but never actually says Christmas, but there's a lot of parallels. And one of the main characters is, like, this totally badass young girl, so. it's a pretty good book. I would recommend it, even though I'm not typically a big fantasy person.
I've never read any Terry Pratchett.
What?
I know, it's like scandalous. I've never read any Terry Pratchett. And so I actually really wanted to read that one because I thought, like, not only will I cover, like, the holiday theme, but I'll get to read my first Terry Pratchett.
He's got a very witty voice, and a lot of the phrasing of things just make you laugh out loud. Mm-hmm. They're really, really witty books. So I do recommend them. I think one of the reasons I was really attracted to reading The Hogfather is because, as I alluded to earlier, the genre, so to speak, not really a genre, was so Christmas-saturated that I was really glad to read something that wasn't overtly Christmas. Yeah. And they call Christmas in The Hogfather Hogwatch, which is just really cute.
Yeah, everybody gets, like, pork products.
Yes, and the Hogfather, who is actually, like, Santa Claus or Father Christmas, is, like, this giant pig. Like, big flaming eyes.
Flaming eyes, nice.
Yeah. Right? You got, like, red eyes?
I don't remember. It's been quite a while since I've read it. I actually have read every single Discworld novel.
Wow.
I think I've read every single Terry Pratchett novel, which honestly isn't that many more than every Discworld novel. It's like, once you've read those 50, like, reading the other 8 isn't that big a deal.
No.
Yeah. I can't believe you put up with me not having ever read any. How have you not, like, thrown one in my hands?
I think it's time, Anna.
Probably because the last, like, 5 haven't been very good.
Oh. I've only read a subset, like I said. Some of the young adult ones are kind of clustered in one area of the chart. I've read those ones.
Yeah, the Tiffany Aching books that started with We Free Men are really good.
I like those ones.
The last one that just came out that I can't exactly remember the title of was his last book that he finished, quote-unquote, before he died. Mm-hmm. And it is a fitting ending to the series, but also it's not actually a finished book.
I've heard that.
Interesting.
It's mostly just that there are a lot of subplots that aren't fully fleshed out.
Right.
So there is like an ending, at least. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't just like get halfway through and then stop. There is an ending, but there's like stuff you're like, what happened to that character?
Yeah. Alright, so what else did you read?
Me?
Yeah.
So the two other, no, three other books I read besides.
My goodness, you went for it.
I was really excited for this genre. I really wanted to read, like, all the Christmas books.
I was, like, I was trying to find ways to make myself excited about doing it. Mm-hmm. And when I couldn't get the original ones I was excited about, I very quickly turned it off. But I'll cover that when we get to what I actually read.
I had way more fun just trying to find terrible Christmas books than actually reading any of them.
Yeah.
So I went and spent quite a while looking through.
You're good for that.
Catalogs and the shelves and finding like every werewolf-themed Christmas anthology or there's multiple of those and vampire ones.
Yes, Matthew always goes that route. I never go that route.
I was also really excited the one that I didn't actually read this, I was just very happy to be able to find it, was Six Guns and Sleigh Bells, a creepy cowboy Christmas anthology.
So good.
Which is just like so many different things at once. I'm like, how does this book exist?
That's one of those books, though, where you look at the title and you're like, yeah, this would be the best thing ever. We should read that one. It'll be so much fun. And then, because the cover is just so cool, right? And the title's so cool. But it's one of those books where you actually open it and like within two sentences, you're like, this was a terrible idea.
Did you actually read it? Because it was short stories, yep. Right? Did you read any of them?
Nope.
Okay, I was curious.
I looked at some of them. It is also very much like a fan publication, basically.
Hmm.
So it's like self-published. There are actual like award-winning Western authors in there, but at the same time, I kind of wonder how difficult it is to become a, like, no offense to award-winning Western authors, I wonder how difficult it is to become an award-winning Western author.
No, I don't know, but that'll be in it. Well, we have the Western genre.
The Westerns, just for that, Matthew, Westerns are coming up next month.
We're going to, like, auto-select this one.
Yeah, maybe I'll read this book then.
All right.
But some of them were also just, like, people that were also wrote stuff. So it was an interesting-looking anthology, if nothing else.
As opposed to computers that also wrote stuff.
Yes, that's the anthology that I wrote, the one that computers write things.
Yeah. Got it. Okay. Just clarifying. People wrote stuff.
I mean, like, not professional writers.
Yeah.
Have you guys read that Roald Dahl short story about the machine that writes books?
No.
What? It's the automatic grammatizer machine or something like that. You gotta read it. It's amazing.
Okay. Okay.
We're gonna put that in the show notes.
Yeah, okay. Well, that's that one. I'm for it.
Yeah. Okay. I love Roald Dahl's adult short stories. I just want to point that out.
But he was a horrible person.
But other issues, yeah,
but,
we'll get to that
okay.
issue at some point.
Okay. I read three other books besides The Hogfather, and I got a really nice mix, actually. I read kind of this, like, romance-y, like, cozy, mystery, you know, classic Christmas story, The Hogfather, which is a fantasy, and then I read a humor book and a classic, so I kind of got, like, all of the fields covered.
Yeah.
So my classic warm Christmas story that I read was The Great Christmas Knit-Off by Alexandra Brown. And I liked this because this was a knitting-themed Christmas book, which is the best. I'm a knitter. And so basically this girl, like, everything goes wrong in her life, and then she loves to knit, and she just, like, on a whim goes to this, like, tiny town where her friend lives, and it's, like, this quintessential, like, winter town, right? Mm-hmm. And she ends up, like, just, like, falling in love with the town and, like, totally saving this old lady's, like, knitting shop and, like, falling in love and, you know, it's, like, everything is, like, picture-perfect, right?
It's all the comfort story.
It's a comfort story.
Yeah.
But, like, it was knitting-themed, which I love because I'm a knitter, and I thought that was really nerdy, like, in a way that I like, so that made it not, like...
Not about handbags?
Yeah, like, when I was talking about the cozy mysteries, we did, like, a few months ago, and, like, one of the reasons I couldn't get it behind it was because it was so fashion-oriented. But knitting is something I can get behind, right?
It's like, is it knitting also fashion?
Shut up! It's different. It's got a total...
Let's name the title of this one. Shut up, Matthew, because it's come out a few times so far.
Sorry, Matthew, I'm tired today. So, yeah, shout out to the fact that it's knitting-themed, but also shout out to the fact that one of the secondary characters in that book is, like, this super, like, fabulous, genderqueer, like, theater guy, which is, like, pretty cool. You know, a little bit, like, stereotyped, for sure, but I liked that. But it was well-written. Like, it actually, like, they never actually say throughout the book that he's actually gay, and they don't say, like, how his gender... how he identifies, so it's actually really cool how most books, if they would include a queer, genderqueer character, they would definitely try and map it, like, he's this, you know, and it's very rare that they let the reader kind of sit with that ambiguity, so I really liked, they wrote that pretty well.
Cool.
So anyway, I really liked that, actually, and it's not a book I'd normally read, The Great Christmas Knit-Off.
I think that falls, like, firmly into one particular reason why people read holiday and Christmas things is it's the time of year when they seek that cozy, mm-hmm. like, warm kind of community building story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it made me feel really warm and cozy. I liked that book.
So I read a book about vampires.
All right. Let's hear about your vampire book, Matthew.
It's actually not. It's kind of different that. It was called Undead and Unreturnable by Mary Janice Davidson, and it is part of the, it's, the series is just called the Undead series, which is not very exciting. And so this is about Betsy Taylor, who is the reluctant queen of the vampires.
Reluctant.
And, yes, and lives in Minneapolis, which is like, I guess, the capital city of vampires in America.
I thought it was the Deep South, a la Anne Rice.
No, in this one it's Minneapolis. So this is a very long series, and it is basically it's a romance series. She's married to the king of the vampires, though there's still conflict there because he's 500 years old and she's not. But I read like the inside blurb, like the inside cover of this was like pretty entertaining. It's about her going off and like wanting to find her gravestone because her parents got it made up when she died. And then she didn't actually get buried. And so they went and looked at her gravestone. I'm like, this is so weird.
Is this Christmas themed? I don't get it.
So that's the interesting thing. So the book is theoretically Christmas themed. It is set several days before Christmas. I think they go Christmas shopping once. Off panel. Like, not off page. And,
he's betraying his comics.
Off panel.
Off panel.
You're betraying your roots.
Off screen. Anyway.
Go for it.
But I discovered that there's actually two different versions of this book. Not the content, I don't believe, has changed, but the cover is.
Oh.
And so one of the covers is specifically Christmas-themed and features a Christmas tree and Christmas presents and all that. The other one is, like, the exact same design, but is just, like, bags from stores instead of presents.
So it looks like it's of a part with the series?
Yes.
Okay.
But it has a different cover.
Doesn't have the same sort of, like, explicit Christmas theming.
And so the Christmas content in this is actually pretty minimal. It's not really, like, there's some snow around and it's wintertime, but it's mostly just about the characters bickering with each other, which is kind of entertaining. There's a serial killer subplot that exists for no apparent reason, really. I think it only exists to introduce a character that will show up in later books. The serial killer bit was the bit that I thought was really strange because I was like, it would have been very easy to make the serial killer Christmas-themed.
A Christmas-themed... You're going to have to elucidate that for me.
Like, I don't know. Like, they dress up as Santa Claus. They kidnap people that look like elves. Like, it doesn't really matter how it's Christmas-themed. Like, they kill people with candy canes.
This subplot was obvious only to you.
To me, if you have a Christmas-themed book and you have a serial killer in it, there should be some sort of, like, overlap there. But instead it was like, nope, he kidnap people out of driveways.
So I actually did try to read a Christmas-themed, like, murder mystery book.
Was this The Fat Man?
No.
Oh, okay.
I did read the first chapter or something, The Fat Man, but I really never had an intention of all the way reading through that one. This is like The Fat Man was a Christmas noir mystery book. It was a little too gimmicky for my taste, and I knew it was going to be, and I was never going to make it all the way through. But I did read the first chapter just out of curiosity. But no, the book that I did try to read was, I thought maybe I should tackle my first J.D. Robb, because it's, J.D. Robb, you know, what is it, Nora Roberts, and, you know, super popular author, and, like, I should try this. So I picked up... And I can't remember the title because I got one chapter through it, I don't think. I picked it up. I literally read the first sentence and was like, oh, I'm not going to make it through this one. And then I kept reading, and I think, I can't remember if I did read it like a chapter or something, because I think it might have been a super short first chapter, and then I got partway through the second one. Something like that. But I just like, oh, I knew very quickly. Yeah, by the time I was on, like, the third or fourth paragraph, I was like, yeah, there's no way, but I'll just see where this is going a little, and then I finally gave up after a few pages. It just did not suit at all, but it was, the murder, like you were describing, was a Christmas-themed murder.
Ah.
Like, at 12 Days of Christmas, I think, was the supposed to be the piece around it. But I didn't get far enough to really find out, because, yeah, I didn't, for reasons. That didn't work for me. I'll try a different one, maybe. Someday, if somebody forces me to, maybe.
So the only other thing about this one that I thought was really worth talking about was the sex. Because clearly everyone loves that. So the main character and her husband have sex a lot in the book. And it was not overtly consensual, but I was like willing to be like, okay, they clearly made an agreement like in book two. you know? But then there was the scene where her husband grabs her, holds her against her will while she struggles and kind of tries to get away and threatens to bite her neck and suck her blood out, which is being, she has expressed as a thing they only do during sex. And I was just like, no, like, this is sexual assault. And then they just continue in their relationship. And it kind of upset me.
Yeah, without addressing it.
Yeah, it was just like, no, okay, you need to apologize and not do that again. I'm just like, that is a bigger deal than you made it out to be. But
yeah, it's interesting. Different ways people take in that and relate to that and how that can jump out, especially in some of the older books where that wasn't as explicit a conversation as we have now about the consent process and what it should look like. And how it should be represented. And I know because, like, you were describing reading this, and you're like, oh, this is better than I thought it would be, and as you were reading through it, and then you got to that part, and it really slogged you down. Like,
yeah.
You almost stopped, I think, on that book at that point and pushed through. But, yeah, it's interesting.
So what did you read, Anna? What did you actually read?
What did I actually read? Well, The Haunted Tea Cozy, because that didn't take me very long. Yeah, so I really did have the problem where I was just too late to the game, and I couldn't find things that I thought would... I couldn't get my hands on things that I thought might be interesting without paying for them, and I was not going to pay for a Christmas-themed or a holiday-themed book. So I was really struggling to find things, so I decided then to go that route of finding, like, who are authors that are super popular that I've never tried that I feel like I should just take a taste of, to get a sense of why people like them or what it is out of those authors that people are seeking. So, J.D. Robb was one of the ones I tried, and that didn't work for me at all. I couldn't do that one. So the next one I tried was Ann Perry. And I didn't know it at the time because I just grabbed one. It happened to be in the new bookshelf, so it was a 2-week borrow. And it came in, and I was like, hey, look, Christmas-themed. And I grabbed it before it hit the shelf again. So it was called A Christmas Escape, again, by Ann Perry. Came out in November 2015, so it was brand new. And I read it without realizing that Ann Perry does a Christmas novels series. So every Christmas, she puts out a Christmas whatever.
She's like a Christmas lifer.
Yeah. So she does this every year. Well, she writes multiple books, like, every year. Like, just very prolific. So I think it's one of the things that people really like about
I think she has a machine that writes the books for her.
We're going back on that one, huh? So, I think that's one of the things people really enjoy is that they know that there will be some consistency, not just in terms of the type or quality of what they get, whatever that quality might be, but that they're also going to get a consistency in how often that comes out. So the fact that you can expect to get a new Christmas story from her every year is, I think, something that people can come to enjoy and build into as part of their holiday process.
They definitely see how that could be an allure factor for people who read that kind of book, or interested in that genre.
Yeah. So it really was not super Christmassy, though. Like, and actually it was funny, because then after I finished it, I went and read a few, just found some Amazon and Goodreads reviews of people who read the book to see what random people thought. And it very much laid out, like, people who read Ann Perry regularly and said, I love Ann Perry, I always read her stuff, were very enthusiastic about the book for the most part. And people who this was, like, their first taste of Ann Perry were like, oh gosh, what did I do? And then there were a little handful of people who regularly read Ann Perry who said, but this one disappointed me, and here's why. And almost every single time that person made a comment, they said because it was not set in a nice, rural, cold, snowy Christmas location, because this was set in Italy.
Wasn't this set in a volcano?
Yeah, not in, but on a volcano. There's a difference. It was set in Italy. It was set in early 1900s, I think. Maybe late 1800s. I don't quite remember. And it was a gentleman who had... I can't remember if he divorced or his wife had died. I don't remember which one. I think his wife had died. I don't know. Anyways, I had gone to Italy. He was kind of seeking a refresh of himself and his life. He was feeling a little like he was going down the wrong path and not being a bad person, but maybe not being the right person and a truly genuine person to his life. And so he's trying to kind of just give himself a break from everything. So we went to Italy, stayed at this like hostel on the side of a mountain, essentially. And they're happy, and it's basically all the other characters that were there at that hostel at the same time as him. And one of them dies, and there's hanky things going on, and then the volcano explodes, and it threatens to kill everybody, and they got to flee off of there while figuring out who it is that's a murderer. So it really was not Christmas themed. Like the big Christmas thing was essentially on like the last page when it's like, and the bell started ringing from the church, and we realized it was Christmas. Like, very last moment on that.
Don't bells ring every day at churches?
Well, you know what?
Maybe not in Italy, I guess. I don't know.
I don't think I would have enjoyed that book.
Yeah, no, it was fine. It wasn't like it was terrible at all. It was one of the... It was plotted so that at least I could follow everything, which, gosh, I've read a fair number of things in my life recently as we've been reading through for this book club that are not plotted well enough where I can actually follow what's going on, mm-hmm. clearly. So, I mean, at least that was good. Some of the characters were fun, but not necessarily fully fleshed out, but they're novellas, essentially, in length. Like, they're real short. They're meant to be just quickly enjoyed and set aside. And so it was fine, but nothing super special. And I could totally see, like, if you're coming to these at Christmas to get that cozy feeling, that if it's not set in our traditional Christmas setting of, like, snow and cottages and
fireplaces
and whatever else.
I think a volcano is just as good as a fireplace.
Yeah. Just a giant fireplace spewing things at you.
Yeah, exactly. That sounds like a fireplace.
There's a lot of death in the book, too. Like, people got crushed by, like, spewing lava.
Well, this sounds a lot more appealing now.
And, like, yeah, no, it was, like, a lot of disaster going on.
So I'd forgotten until right now that I actually started another book and didn't finish it.
What'd you start?
Because it was so god-awful, in my opinion. That was Skipping Christmas by John Grisham, which I think they made into a movie not too long ago, actually. And I thought, oh, this is going to be great, like John Grisham, big author, you know, I like mystery novels. Well, it's not a mystery novel, but...
Is it a lawyer novel?
No, it's not a lawyer novel.
Isn't that what he writes?
Yeah. Mystery, lawyer, whatever.
Thriller.
Thriller.
Suspense.
Yeah, whatever.
In that area.
Thrill Spence,
yes.
The point of the book, though, is that he and his wife, their daughter goes away, and they decide, their town is, like, super overtly, like, Christmassy, and he decides they're going to skip Christmas this year, and instead they're going to, like, go to Hawaii or whatever. And I thought it was going to be, like, kind of a silly book, but, like, fine. But I actually, like, could not read it, because it was, number one, so poorly written, but number two, it wasn't, the book cover, or the way I've been led to believe about the book, I thought it was going to be very, like, harmless, kind of like, we're going to skip Christmas, but actually, the husband who gets this idea in his mind, like, is actually quite mean to his wife, and, like, she's kind of, like, not so sure about the idea, but he, like, really, like, strong-arms her all the time, like, do you want to do this or not? And, like, it really made me uncomfortable, their relationship with one another, and how he really didn't, like, seem to respect her opinions at all. Mm-hmm. And, like, whenever she was kind of like, well, maybe we should buy, like, cards from, you know, the boys who come round for their Christmas fundraiser every year, and he's like, no! We're skipping Christmas completely! And, like, just kind of, like, shuts her up. So that made me really, really uncomfortable, and I couldn't even finish the book. So I wouldn't recommend that one. Skipping Christmas by John Grisham. He should stick to his lawyer novels.
I guess you don't know if there was an actual plot beyond, like, this dude hates his wife.
My guess is that they go to Hawaii and they realize that...
Christmas is worth having.
They can compromise or something.
Maybe he throws her into a volcano.
Yeah. I don't know how it ends. I don't really care, though, actually.
That's fine.
So, yeah, whatever.
Yeah, so what else do we read?
I read two other books. I read Holidays on Ice by David Sedaris, which is, you know, typical David Sedaris, a bunch of short stories that are quite humorous.
In a specific way.
In a very specific David Sedaris way. Generally kind of like autobiographical stories. It starts out with this very long elf story about how he goes through a patch in his life where he's kind of like broke, and he works a short-term contract as an elf in the mall during the Christmas season. And in typical David Sedaris style, it's hilarious because he's so, like, crotchety, and, like, some of the, like, thoughts he's thinking or, like, the things he wants to say to, like, customers and annoying children, like, are just so funny. And so the tension between, like, you know, happy elves and, like, his, like, really, really, like, politically incorrect, like, mean-spirited thoughts are really funny. I enjoyed that. It was a bit long, but it went on a bit, but it was fine.
That tension often makes me, like, I'm never sure when it goes too far. Like, I always have trouble with reading Sedaris.
Yeah, it went a little far for me, and it went a little long for me as well, but parts of it I found really funny. The rest of the stories in the book were much shorter and kind of hit and miss. The elf story is really the only one I remember particularly. But yeah, it was okay. I wouldn't give it a 5 out of 5, but it was fine.
It's fine for a funny holiday read.
Yeah.
If that's what you're feeling like.
I think I read it in like 2 hours, honestly. Like, yeah. It was quite short.
Yeah.
Shorter than I thought it was going to be.
Didn't you read something really short, Anna?
I read something super short. Yes, I did. I read, Paul Auster's, it was basically like a short story that was just illustrated and put into a little booklet, essentially, like a hardback-bound booklet, called Auggie Wren's Christmas Story. Apparently this was actually originally published written for and published as the holiday edition for, like, the New York Times or something. I didn't quite follow that exactly, back in, like, the early 1990s. But then it republished as a little book. So it had illustrations all through it, too, but they weren't, like, directly relating to the story. They were sort of a little more abstract. But it was just Paul Auster had apparently gotten this assignment to write this story that was their Christmas story for the year, and he was trying to figure out how to do it without being a total sap. And he was really uncomfortable with this assignment, but he'd agreed, so he's going to find a way. And so he has this person in the neighborhood that he goes and talks with, and this person tells him a story that's supposed to be the person presents it to him as kind of an anti or a non-Christmas story, but it actually has sort of a Christmas theme about, like, the guy ends up pretending to be a blind woman's son, and even, like, actually, I think, steal some stuff from her. You know,
this is a short story.
That's a short story. The guy.
What happens in the short story?
I know. So he pretends to be this blind woman's son that comes to visit for Christmas, and he actually steals some things from her, but he also ends up spending the whole day with her and spends Christmas with her and shares, like, you know, this really convivial moment, and he's pretty sure she completely knows that he is absolutely not her son, but just goes with it. And then he shows up months later, like, just keeps mulling over this woman who was blind, who he spent the day with, who he stole some stuff from, and goes back to visit her months later, and she's gone, and he doesn't know what happened to her. So, this is, like, the story that this gentleman presents to Paul Auster, and Paul Auster, like, has this twist at the end where he's like, I'm pretty sure that guy was totally lying to me. That didn't happen, and it was supposed to be a true story. Anyways, it was very, very short. It was basically I don't feel like I really met the spirit of reading for the book club and making myself, like, with my little Anne Perry book that really did not take me very long to read either. So I was trying to read something else, and so I read something, like, a third shorter than the short little Anne Perry. Like, it was not a super successful, like, read, like, intensely sort of season for me.
That's okay. I've taken a few months off of the book club myself, so.
Yeah. So I read two other things as well. Well, one of them I didn't actually completely read, but it was Greetings from Christmas Past, which was a postcard book or like a greeting card book.
Yeah. One of our other group members also went through this.
So it was just like old pictures of old greeting cards from Christmas time, which sounds really dorky, but is actually kind of interesting to me, at least, I guess, because some of these are really strange. There were Christmas bats, and the comments from the person that wrote the book are like kind of snarky at times, which you don't really expect. Like, they're kind of making fun of people for like, oh, look at all these like dogs on these cards. What was it with Victorian people? not exactly like that, but like you kind of get there was like sort of a subtext to it that made it seem like the person was collected these but thought they were stupid.
And the other person who read that really enjoyed the tone of the person who was writing about it was apparently very clever and interesting. And actually, she really got into it.
It's so weird because you don't expect that tone from a book about greeting cards from the 1970s.
And it's one of those ones that you find when you have to do the display piece and you're like, all right, what are all the books we have about Christmas? I gotta just load this thing up because they're gonna disappear and I need lots and lots and lots of them. And so it's one of those ones you just select because you need additional fodder for that display. And then the fact that you opened it up and actually found something that was fun to engage with and, you know, not read like you would read a all the way through cover to cover book, but to dip in and out of and actually really worked was kind of cool.
Mm-hmm.
So what else did you read, Amanda? You had
read one last book, which was the classic book Miracle on 34th Street by Valentine Davies. And, of course, that's made into a very classic film.
Yeah.
I didn't actually know it was a book.
Neither did I. But it is. It was written quite a long time ago, like 1940, 1950. It's cute and classic. Centers around this guy named Kris Kringle, who claims that he is like Santa Claus, and he gets a job working at the big mall, like Macy's or whatever, in New York. And the town of New York is in such an uproar about him claiming he's like actually Santa that they put him on trial to see whether he's actually the real Santa, because they think he's, mentally ill.
You'd think that New York would have something better to do with their time.
But they didn't.
For the purposes of this story.
It's a cute, classic, spirit of Christmas kind of book. And it's very quaint, you know, it's like 1940s New York.
Right? How well was it written? How was it?
It was short. It was written in simple sentences, so a young reader could read it. Oh. It almost felt like it was aimed towards a 12 to 15, or it could be relatable to a 12 to 15-year-old audience.
Aren't the movies for kids? I've never seen them.
I haven't seen it, actually.
I get the feeling that, I could see how this story was written intentionally with the concept of really, being for the family.
Mm-hmm. It's definitely a family story about the keeping the magic of Christmas alive kind of story. So, yeah, it's kind of oriented towards a young audience.
And it seems like that would be
audience.
Yeah, yeah, during that time frame when it came out, that might be a real goal of, who we were aiming for reasons.
Yeah.
Around supporting family and community and uplifting spirits.
Mm-hmm. It was a quick read. It was written very simply, but I think it was also written elegantly. So it was good.
So the last one I read was Red Satin Collection by Giselle Renard. And despite what the cover said, I don't think this is actually a collection of everything. It's just a novella. I was kind of curious about this. This is definitely outside of what I normally read. It is a queer/trans erotic romance novel.
As you do.
Yep. It is Christmas themed. It is set at Christmas time. And it actually won a Rainbow Award for best trans romance, or I can't remember exactly what it won, but
a Lambda?
No. I don't know.
Okay. We'll look it up.
Yeah.
We'll have it in the show notes.
So it's about this person who is trans, male to female, and they are going home for Christmas. And they are bringing their partner with them, who is a First Nations person, and neither of them has been back to a First Nations female, I should specify, and neither of them has been back to their hometown since, for a long time. So this is the first time that the main character is going to see her family again, and she's pretty worried about this. So this is an incredibly Canadian book in some ways. And parts of it I really enjoyed, in like when she's back at her mom's house and her brother comes and gives them Christmas presents, and it turns out he bought them the like wrong hockey team related thing. And then there's also a section where they start talking about residential schools, and I'm just like, in this erotic romance novel is kind of weird. There's a lot of sex in it, like a lot, and it's fine, I guess. I don't care that much. I don't know if you want to, honestly, if you want to read a Christmas themed trans / lesbian erotic romance novel, there's probably not that many different things you can read. There's probably not a lot of choice, but this one was pretty decent. It was better written than I expected it to be.
That's good.
Yeah. The one thing I didn't like about it was that there were, for the vast majority of the book, there were basically no positive male characters. Mm-hmm. And when one positive male character did show up near the end of the book, it was like, the fact that they were not a horrible person was like a twist.
Oh, like they had been, you'd been expecting them.
Yes, expecting them to be horrible. Okay. Yeah. Like, it's like, I'm like, oh, that's fine, I guess. Like, it's not that big a deal, but still, it's just like, oh.
You mean the disappointing to have it be that all
It wasn't disappointed. It was just kind of like, and I guess it's something that, as, like, that other people encounter a lot more. Mm-hmm. It's like, you're not, I guess the fact that it's rare for there to, A, not be that many straight male characters in a book, and B, for them all to be jerks, like, not protagonists, is not really a common thing. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I shouldn't even be complaining, really. Like, it's tough to say.
It's just noted.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I'm curious, do any of you ever intentionally read around the holidays? Like, anything specific around the holidays, whether it is a holiday-themed book or other things?
I read books I get for Christmas.
I don't, but, like, I would. You know what I mean? Like, if J.K. Rowling, like, just decided to come out with, like, a Christmas series and, like, publish a Christmas story, like, every year, I mean, you bet I would, like, read that every year, right? Mm-hmm. Like, if my favorite authors did that, I'd be all over it. So, I could see myself being that kind of person. Yeah. But I'm not.
I was trying to think if there was any seasonality other even than Christmas into my reading, and whether or not there's certain times of year that I always gravitate to certain things.
You know something that is really big, not for me, but for friends of mine, is that every October they will watch a lot of horror movies or read horror books because of Halloween.
Yeah.
And so that's one that I think does affect people's reading habits or media habits.
I read cozy things when semesters get hard at school.
Yeah.
I think I rewatch Veronica Mars every September.
All of it?
Shh.
I used to
there's only three seasons.
Years and years ago, I used to always watch the Anne of Green Gables movies with Megan Fallows. Oh. Like every final season I would watch it, because I was like, everything's gonna be fine in the universe because Anne of Green Gables says so. Like, just every year I needed that, like, the world works out perfect. Mm-hmm. Because that's just the way it is.
Mm-hmm. Similarly, I'll gravitate to the Harry Potter novels when things get stressful.
Yeah. Plus, I have a, like, total Megan Fallows crush. So, you know. As you do.
But, yeah, I can't say I read Christmas novels on the regular every Christmas.
Yeah, no, I certainly don't. I can't. I don't read and think. I don't do, like, horror books or anything like that around Halloween or anything. Nope. So I couldn't think of any kind of seasonality that is regular for me. I certainly will work in cycles where I'll tend to read certain things for a while, but it's never really seasonally based, and I'm not even sure that I, other than the fact that I used to watch Anne of Green Gables, and that was years ago, years and years ago.
Yes.
So what, are there any holidays you would like to read books about that, like, were set during that? I think you mentioned wanting to read solstice-themed books.
That was when I was really sad I couldn't get my hands on. I would have really enjoyed that.
Yeah, nothing would have particularly tempted me from this. I ended up trying to go through a variety of other ways of getting at it by, like, either picking a genre or a style, or I was mostly trying to go through humor ones. I even looked at a Physics of Christmas book, which is, like, I read a fair amount of popular science, so that seemed like a decent choice for me. And it was relatively entertaining, but I was not feeling like reading something that long at the time. Like, it's just too crazy of a season.
I guess I'm just not a big holiday person.
The only one I really care about is Halloween.
Yeah, your prime holiday of the year.
Yep,
that makes sense.
Yeah, every now and again I'll pull out like Dracula or something. Or I don't know.
No
real holidays to my reading habits.
So what would be the appeal then, you think? Like, we talked a little bit about this already, but what kind of things would be the appeal for deciding to read?
It seemed the Christmas books fell into two categories. There were the ones where everything went perfectly, that were, like, the comfort food, and then there was the, like, the ones where Christmas is awful and you have to deal with your family and it's terrible.
And or funny.
Yeah. Well, like, I think that the funniness is like, I have to personally deal with my family. Let me read about other families that are more entertaining than mine.
I see. Yeah, that seems like a reasonable way of looking at it, where it's either, like,
escapism.
Yeah, two different forms of escapism there from it.
Yep.
Yeah. I also did think, like, I mean, there is a clear tendency for any given genre that we're used to reading in anyways to have its Christmas-themed versions. Like, man, there are a lot of Christmas-themed mysteries after I started actually looking for it, and there's a heck of a lot of Christmas-themed romance out there. It's not particularly feeling like reading a romance. I even picked one up trying to, but...
There's also a lot of Christmas-themed superhero comics.
Yeah.
Who knew?
It's a thing.
Yep.
Christmas theme, everything. There's got to be a version of it. Yeah, I do think this, it's the coziness. I also think there's the, if it comes out regularly, then there's the, like, every year I know.
Expectation, the habit, yeah.
Yeah, the habit. I do think, like, it's a time of year where people like to find a little thing that they do each year. So that can be
tradition.
Little tradition piece is real strong that time of year.
Yeah.
And I also think, like, it's sometimes it's nice, even if you otherwise don't celebrate the season all that much, to have some little piece or way that you recognize it privately for yourself. So that could be, like, deciding to read a Christmas-themed whatever it is you usually read within time frame.
It's a good thought.
So, you know, I was just thinking about various reasons why. Because, it like, our Christmas-themed display at one of the places I worked at a lot during that time of year, it just flew off. It disappeared. And it's not like we have an audience that, or a particularly, like, uber-updated Christmas collection of the, you know, hottest new titles. Like,
perhaps you should be suggesting to your uppers that they should be beefing it up.
I don't know, but they flew off the shelf.
Because
anyways.
The branch, the library branch that I frequent the most often, in terms of being a patron, because I don't work in public libraries. I don't know why I'm part of a reader's advisory club, because I'm a health librarian.
Awesome, and you read a lot, and you think about what you read. That's great.
But at the local library branch that I go to most often, I go to the library, like, every day, right? So the books kind of just stayed there.
Oh,
they actually didn't circulate too heavily.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Hard to say. There's definitely the, like, anything that was, like, Christmas craft theme, like, the month before, there was a display up of, like, make a Christmas craft thing or, like, make your own home gifts, and those were, like, very popular. But I always think, like, more people intend to do that than ever actually do.
We had a whole bunch of Christmas craft books at my local library branch, but they all looked like they were straight out of, like, 1970.
Yeah, I know. They do tend to, like, be held onto forever.
They looked awful.
They aren't the most attractive looking items we have. I found that a lot of the Christmas collections, they had so many older things in them because there's not, like, you know, an incredible wealth of new Christmas titles every year. There are some, but it's, like, not, like, enough where you can always guarantee that you have a full display shelf of perfectly new-looking items. So you do tend to end up with a lot of things that have stuck around for ages and just don't look quite as nice. And that can be a real challenge, because having a good-looking display actually does, like, of nice-looking materials really does actually help them to circulate and leave the shelf. They look battered and out of date. Even if they've got good content, they tend not to circulate.
True.
All right.
So our branches should buy more Christmas-themed books?
Apparently.
I don't know. I'd be interested to see the numbers. I actually did not look at the numbers at all for circulating. But be interesting to see.
All right. I think that's it.
Yep.
Let's go.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Book Club for Masochists. You can find us on Tumblr at bookclub4, as in the numeral, m.tumblr.com, on Twitter at bookclub4, the numeral again, m, on Pinterest at pinterest.com/bookclub4, the numeral, m, and on Goodreads, where you'll just have to search for Book Club for Masochists.
On our Tumblr, you can find reviews and thoughts on books that might not have gotten discussed today, show notes that will provide links to things we mentioned, and social media information for everyone who appeared on this episode.
All opinions are our own and do not reflect our place of employment, if they exist.
We would like to give acknowledgement to the Vancouver Public Library for use of their Inspiration Lab, where we record the show. Any faults with the audio quality are representative of them.
Hey.
Are representative of our own learning processes.
Come back next time when we inflict upon you the genre of Aboriginal, First Nation, and Indigenous literature.
Everything's gonna be fine in the universe because Anne of Green Gables says so!